Okay, the Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Conley, Judge Larkin, Judge Smith, the Honorable Francis J. Conley presiding.
Thank you. Good morning. Our first case this morning is 821-1206 in the matter of the Surveillance and Integrity Review Appeal by Matthew Wright. As all parties are aware, this is a Zoom oral argument. It is being recorded. However, our rules prohibit any counsel or party or other individual observing from making their own recording, so please abide by that. As counsel is aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Whenever you're ready, counsel, for relator, you can begin your argument by just identifying yourself in a loud, clear voice, please.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Good morning, Mr. Shaw. My name is Jason Schellick, S-C-H-E-L-L-A-C-K, and I appear this morning on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Wright. As the court is obviously aware, this is an appeal of an administrative decision. The timeline and the facts here obviously are not in dispute. Back in June of 2019, Wright County Fraud Protection Wright County Fraud Prevention Investigator made a report of potential fraud to the Department of Human Services. On May 26, almost 2 years ago, Your Honors, DHS issued a notice of suspension to my client, suspending him for a period of 3 years from participating as a vendor in Minnesota's CDCS program. And CDCS stands for Community Directed Community Support. To get the court a little bit of background, CDCS is a benefit of medical assistance. So in this case, the recipient, also referred to as Child 1 in the ALJ's recommendation, has significant diagnoses of autism and I believe a developmental disability and requires a great amount of care in the home. And the purpose of the CDCS program through medical assistance is to allow the recipient, Child 1, to have the available, to have in-home support so as to not need the level of care that would be required by a more restrictive setting such as a group home or a supported living apartment. So the entire purpose of CDCS is to allow Child 1 to live in her home with caregivers of her own choosing. And I think what gets lost in all of this is that because of the commissioner's final decision, final order issued on August 19th, 2021, Child 1 lost a full-time caregiver, okay? And that effect on Child 1 seems to not have been taken into consideration almost at all by the commissioner and by DHS in making their decision. And if the court reads—
Can I interrupt for a moment there, Mr. Schellick? I had thought that the consideration of harm to the child isn't that someone who commits fraud will deprive the child of a caregiver, but instead that there was not an analysis of whether the actual fraudulent billing result in a lack of care. In other words, the argument that I understood you making is that the child was in fact receiving all of those hours of care. They were just misidentified. That's what I thought the argument was, but maybe I'm wrong there. I thought that he cited times where the child was not available, but in fact, there was lots of care given after hours.
And Your Honor, you are right. I believe on both counts. So part of the argument is that yes, it's a little bit difficult to answer because DHS did its own investigation, which arguably was incomplete. And then we had a full hearing in front of Judge LaFave. And Judge LaFave did find that the hours that Mr. Wright, my client, the appellant, did work the hours and that the recipient, Child 1, did receive the care and that she was not at all harmed. And I believe, to quote ALJ LaFave's findings, in his memorandum of law, the ALJ said, however, the consideration of the effect of the conduct on Child 1 was barely mentioned. The group was properly concerned about whether the child was receiving services, but it seemed like a theoretical concern. There was no mention that child one was autistic and in need of special services, and there was no effort to establish what services were being provided. So,
Okay, thank you. And does the fine, you said that the court found that the, the ALJ found that the services were in fact being provided just in different hours. Where can you just point me to that finding? I mean, I don't want to take up your time if you don't
It's okay, Your Honor. It would be in the our appellant statutory addendum in the findings of fact from ALJ Lefebvre.
Okay, I mean, I see a finding that the appellant notes that he typically provided 60 hours of services, et cetera. And maybe, I guess, if he was found credible, maybe that's the theory, but go ahead. You can. I don't want to take up your time.
No, Your Honor, it's completely fine. As I'm reviewing the ALJ's recommendation, and I do recognize it's a recommendation, it's not binding on anyone. But in reviewing the recommendation, appellate noted that he typically provided over 60 hours of services per week to child one, not the 40 hours reported on his timesheets, and that the ALJ did find him credible. And this would not be uncommon, Your Honor. So for this type of program, CDCS, an in-home service under medical assistance, parents are allowed, and people who live in the home, in this case, appellant is stepfather to child one, are allowed to be paid to provide care while they're living in the home. Of course, the purpose of which is to allow that child to live in the home. But it's not uncommon that those parents and those caregivers are providing more than those 40 hours a week. In this case, the record shows Mr. Wright testified it was 60 hours a week. And in the language that we use in the community, he's donating an additional 20 hours of natural time to medical assistance to continue to provide care for child one.
Counsel, could you, when I originally had read the decision in the your brief, I thought, 3 years, that seems a bit harsh. But then I thought the state did a pretty good job of distinguishing the cases you're relying on, saying other people have gotten less than 3 years. How do you respond to the government's argument that caring professionals, and I don't know how I pronounce this right, A-D-I-I-A-D-E-Y-E-Y-E, M-O-U-S-E, is very different from these cases, and that the one that sort of looks closest is Hodges. What's your response to that?
Certainly, Your Honor. So in the ALJ's recommendation, the two cases the ALJ discussed were the caring professionals case and the, I'm going to call it the ADA case. And ALJ Lefebvre found that this case, Mr. Wright's case, was most closely related, or the facts and the outcome were most closely related to the ADA case, in which there was a monetary penalty and no suspension involved. But to get to, and Your Honor, was your question the Andrews case or the Hodges case?
Hodges.
Hodges case. So the distinction, Your Honor, between this case and the Hodges case is the period over which the overbilling occurred. So in Hodges case, Hodges overbilled for a period of about 3 months, or at least that was the 3 month review period. In Mr. Wright's case, it was a period of 6 months, and the number of overbilled hours and the amount of the overpayments were approximately similar. So the argument is, if Hodges had been allowed to go for another 6 months, there would have been double the amount of overbilled hours and double the amount of overpayment, which could have resulted in DHS or the commissioner suspending Hodges for double the amount of time, 3 years. Another case that I think the court needs to look at is the Michael Earl Newsom case, which we of course argue is one of the cases, other than the cases identified by ALJ Lefebvre, is the case that probably most closely fits this fact pattern that's before the court today. With Mr. Newsom's case, it's a 2018 case. He submitted incorrect time cards. The actual care was actually provided, so there was no harm to the recipient. There were 90 instances of overlap. And in our case, I believe there are 81 instances of overlap. And specifically in the Newsom case, the ALJ found that Mr. Newsom provided credible testimony. He did not intend to obtain a compensation for services that he hadn't performed. And the result in that case was a 2-year suspension. So I think that fact pattern, if we have to look at any of the cases before us that have been cited by either party, the Newsom fact pattern is really most similarly situated to Mr. Wright's case. If this court were to overturn the commissioner's decision to uphold the original 3-year suspension, this court has any number of options. We, of course, take the position and have taken the position that ALJ LaFave's developed record and reasoned recommendation would be the most appropriate result in this case, which would be the 1-year suspension. However, I understand time and space goes on, and 2 years from the date that the appellant was suspended would be May of 2022 of this year. So if this court followed the reasoning and the outcome of the Newsom case or found it to be persuasive, a 2-year suspension could be appropriate, and that would end Mr. Wright's suspension from the program as a vendor effective May of this year. So in just a month, Your Honor.
And then I did have one other question, you know, regarding to the statutory factors, nature, chronicity, severity. In the government's brief on page 14, counsel says, Ms. LaBrie testified that DHS considered all the statutory factors as well. Is that statement correct? Did she testify to that? Does the record support that statement?
Yes.
But your position is, so what are we supposed to do then? I mean, if there's testimony in the record that says that, and you're saying, well, what, that not that it's not true, but that, you know, you've got to do more than just sort of rote saying, I considered all those factors. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what we're supposed to do with how to get around that if we agreed with your position.
I think the best answer that I have for the court would be to direct the court to ALJ LaFave's recommendation when he concluded that the consideration of the effect of the appellant's conduct on the recipient was superficial. So yes, at hearing, a DHS investigator can say, we considered all these things, but then it's the job of the judicial officer to analyze that testimony and make determinations based upon that testimony. And ALJ LaFave, who again had the advantage of developing a full record in hearing, said that the consideration given to the conduct was superficial, which I find to be very problematic. And in fact, in the commissioner's final order, the commissioner adopted all 19 findings of fact, all of the conclusions of law, except for one from the commissioner, and simply was allowed, as the commissioner is allowed to do, to redline objectionable language that the commissioner didn't like. Yes, Your Honor. So conclusion of law 9 was adopted in part, but modified in part by the commissioner. So conclusion of law nine originally stated the department presented credible evidence that it had considered the nature, chronicity, and severity of the appellant's conduct, but its consideration of the effect of appellant's conduct on the person receiving services was superficial. And the commissioner just didn't like that. The commissioner wanted to insert its own will and not its own judgment, didn't like ALJ Lefebvre's judgment, and crossed out the language about being superficial. And it was self-serving, Your Honor.
So can I ask, what if the testimony had been, we considered it, we didn't find any harm, nevertheless, we decided to impose the sanction that we imposed. Is what under what standard of review, and if any, would you win then? It's considered, but it doesn't matter in the balance of the factors. It didn't matter in the balance of the factors.
So our argument is that we would prevail under both standards of review. The first standard of review being whether the commissioner's decision is supported by substantial evidence in light of the entire record. So I think, and I would direct the
court. I'm assuming that they found no harm, yet nevertheless. So, I mean, the record would support no harm in your
correct.
Theory, but.
Your Honor, you are correct. And I believe the commissioner has stipulated that that there was no harm. And I believe in the exceptions the commissioner filed, there was language that there was no harm found. So under the first argument, the first standard of review, whether the commissioner's decision is unsupported by substantial evidence in light of the entire record, then we prevail because the entire record shows there was absolutely no harm to the respondent, to child one, that this was a clerical error that Mr. Wright inadvertently made and should be given some sort of consequence, but not as severe as a consequence of 3 years. Our argument is the court should follow the well-reasoned findings of fact, conclusions of law, and recommendations from Judge Lefebvre and reduce the suspension to 1 year. We also prevail, Your Honor, under the arbitrary and capricious standard of review. Under the arbitrary and capricious standard of view, the agency is not allowed to insert its own will instead of its own judgment. And in this case, it's pretty clear to me in reading the commissioner's orders, the commissioner, by cherry picking what the commissioner thought was nice from ALJ, from the ALJ's recommendation, and striking what the commissioner thought was not favorable to the commissioner, was certainly the commissioner exercising its own will and not its own judgment. The judgment here
Thank
in
you.
This case.
Thanks.
Did you want to sort of just sum up your point then, Mr. Schlack?
Your Honor, I believe that I'm over my time. I have made the points that I wanted to make. I think at the end of the day, the court needs to consider both the fact that there was no harm to child one, and as a result of the commissioner's 3-year suspension, as we sit here today, child one has been deprived of a in-home full-time caregiver of her choice.
Thank you. We'll now hear for counsel for the government, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, counsel. May it please the court. And I'll just say off the bat, I came down with a cold last night, so I apologize for the stuffiness and the occasional cough or sip of water that I might have to take. Your Honors, the only, and by the way, for the record, Peter Shaw, SHAW, for the Department of Human Services, and I'm an assistant attorney general. Your Honors, the only issue in this case is whether the appellant met his burden of showing the commissioner's 3-year sanction constitutes a clear abuse of discretion. As Mr. Schlack said during his oral argument, appellant does not dispute the finding that he engaged in sanctionable abuse of the medical assistance program, nor does he dispute the ALJ and commissioner's finding that DHS met its statutory obligation by considering the nature, severity, and chronicity of his conduct and the conduct's effect on the recipient when imposing the sanction. Because appellant is solely challenging the choice of sanction and the severity of the sanction, this case must be reviewed under the clear abuse of discretion standard. And I know Mr. Schlock and appellant's brief, they brought up the substantial evidence test as well as the arbitrary and capricious test. But as DHS argues in its brief, the proper standard when this court is judging the choice of a sanction is the clear abuse of discretion standard. But like those other two tests, the clear abuse of discretion standard is a highly deferential one. It's intended to protect the principles of separation of powers on certiorari review. And this court has repeatedly held that an agency's choice of sanctions is not a finding of fact, but an exercise of discretionary power, and absent a clear abuse of discretion, has repeatedly stated it will not disturb an agency's sanction, even if the court believes a different determination could have been reached. It is undisputed that over an approximately 6.5 month period, out of 109 dates when the recipient of care was documented as attending an after-school program, there were 81 instances where the appellant falsely claimed to have provided services and billed the medical assistance program, even though the recipient was not available for services. This resulted in 344 unallowed hours and an overpayment of about $6,500 to his provider agency.
Counsel, what are we, at one point, the ALJ does a good job of saying, well, I found Mr. Schleck's client credible, and specifically finds that he testified credibly about why he filled out the time cards the way he did and was not trying to cheat or obfuscate. But then how do we, and fine, that's the finding. But then in your brief, you point out that appellant admitted his false information led to a string of illegal maneuvers and that there was probably a lot more overlap than what the investigator found is in his investigation. I suppose that helps you, but I guess I find it hard to understand that finding of credibility when there was that testimony. I guess I don't know, what are we supposed to do with that? And does that give us grounds to say, well, you got that wrong too, so the sanction was fine?
Your Honor, DHS is arguing that based on the findings of fact that the ALJ specifically made, where I see where you're coming from with that question. I think to try to square those two things, I think the ALJ found Mr. Wright to be credible, even though Mr. Wright admitted this was a wrong-headed attempt, I think that is the ALJ's words, to simplify his bookkeeping. And the ALJ did not find fraud or that he was intentionally cheating. And under the statute, to find abuse, the DHS does not have to show fraudulent intent. It just has to show that he was reporting inaccurately his time card. So I think the ALJ wasn't excusing that conduct, and it certainly should not be excused. But the ALJ was specifically mentioning he found him to be credible in his testimony that he wasn't intentionally doing this, which I suppose goes to the nature of the conduct. And DHS will concede that even if you do consider Mr. Wright credible, and we're not arguing that factual finding should be overturned, but based on the undisputed facts, even if you find Mr. Wright credible, based on these undisputed facts of the number of unallowed hours, the overpayment amount, and the other factors that DHS considered, this court should still find that the 3-year sanction is not an abuse of discretion.
So can I ask, so we're working then from the factual findings that he didn't intend to cheat, that the child in fact received more than the hours that he was paid for. And 3 years seems like pretty harsh in those circumstances from someone who didn't intend to cheat and actually gave the full, more than full services.
Your Honor, this court, when it's reviewing the choice of a sanction, again, I think it's important to keep in mind the scope of this court's review, which is the clear abuse of discretion standard. And we cite to, a case in our brief where this court has described a sanction that it was reviewing as harsh, yet it still upheld the sanction because, again, the clear abuse of discretion standard is a highly deferential standard intended to protect the interests of separation of powers. So even if this court believes that a different determination could have been reached, it has to look at the decision under the clear abuse of discretion standards. And based on those undisputed facts, I do not believe this court can say that 3 years constitutes a clear abuse of discretion.
Is there a case, the best case for, and I'm sure they're in here, and I'm sorry, I should know this from reading it, but what's the best case for a note where someone in fact, the recipient received all the services contracted for, just, and yet a 3 year or a similar suspension was given?
Certainly. We cite to, and these were the cases that we DHS cited in its exceptions arguments to the commissioner for upholding the 3 year suspension. But the Hodges case, which is not a court of appeals case, it's an OAH case, was a 3 year suspension case with some approximately similar number of overlaps and a similar number of unallowed hours and overpayment amount. And in that case, there was no finding of harm, and the ALJ found services were provided at other times than reported. That was, again, a three-year suspension case. So it's very similar facts to this case. And I will say, too, and I know appellant goes through great efforts in his brief to distinguish the cases that were cited by DHS in its exceptions argument. I think it's important for the court to pull back and realize, though, that the question in this case is whether the three-year sanction constitutes a clear abuse of discretion. And every case is going to have its own unique distinguishing factors. And perhaps in Hodges, there was a smaller or a shorter review period than in this case. But that's not the question. This court has never required the commissioner to prove with exacting detail that her suspension from one case is exactly the same as is based on the exact same facts as another previous case. Again, this is a clear abuse of discretion review. And those cases, by and large, all of them cited by the commissioner support the three-year suspension. I'll also draw the court's attention to the In Re Benham case, which is not exactly what you asked about, Judge Smith, but I think it's important to reiterate this point. That case, In Re Benham, 2016 Westlaw 363483, which was cited in DHS's brief, that case stated that this court has reversed an agency's sanctions determination only when a license revocation, which is a much more severe sanction than a suspension, because you're talking about taking away someone's livelihood potentially permanently. So this court has deemed a sanctions determination, has reversed an agency sanctions determination only when a license revocation was deemed too severe to reflect the seriousness of a violation. And in those cases cited by the commissioner, where license revocations were overturned, those cases really had some compelling circumstances that led the court to say, even under the clear abuse of discretion standard, we think that this revocation should be overturned. And just as an example, the Kane case, which was cited in our brief, that was a license revocation case where an insurance agent's license was revoked, and then the Court of Appeals overturned that decision. But in that case, there was findings in the record that the state agency had engaged in some misleading conduct during the investigation, and also settled with the agency's company, and the agency's company had apparently a lot of culpability in the reason why the revocation was imposed in the first place. The agency settled with the agency's company for, quote, little more than a slap on the wrist, end quote, while its agents, quote, suffered the loss of their licenses. In this case, we're not talking, those compelling circumstances are not present in this case, and we're not talking about a revocation. We're talking about a suspension. And so, again, I think it's important.
Let's say, for the sake of argument, we agree with counsel for the relator. What would we do? I mean, I suppose the one thing we wouldn't do is say, well, about 2 years. But what would we do? Would we just reverse and remand for the imposition of the 1 year? Or, I mean, what, obviously you want us to agree with the 3 years, but what would the proper procedure for us be on a remand if we were to do that?
Your Honor, if this court finds that there was a clear abuse of discretion and that the 3 year sanction is not appropriate, in those circumstances, I believe remand would be appropriate with and with instruction to the commissioner that 3 year sanction is not is a clear abuse of discretion. However, the commissioner would then have the discretion to impose a lesser sanction in those specific circumstances.
Can I ask, and, counsel, what is the reasoning for the department's decision to strike consideration was superficial? Can you just put that in context for me? Is that like a factual finding that was just changed by the commissioner? What's the stand? I mean, I think the argument for the arbitrary and capricious is that's just an imposition of will and there's not a rational, you know, there's not a non-arbitrary reason to change that. Can you explain to me why that is a valid thing for the department to do and not
certainly, certainly. So that superficiality statement comes from not a findings of fact, but a conclusion of law. It's important to remember the ALJ did find that DHS showed that it considered the nature, severity, and chronicity, as well as the effect of the conduct in his recommendation. He did label the discussion of the effect of the conduct superficial, which the commissioner modified in her brief, or excuse me, in her recommendation. And I think for good reason too. First, there's no requirement in the statute that the effect of the conduct be discussed with a certain depth. And I think here the commissioner was concerned to making sure that the statutory considerations were raised by DHS, were discussed, but the ALJ's determination that this discussion was superficial, the commissioner thought was either against the facts, because Ms. LaBrie did testify to the fact that they did consider the effect of the conduct, and the consideration, as the ALJ points out, was the risk that the child was not receiving services. The commissioner may have also found that that finding, that conclusion of law, was inconsequential, and that that, again, the statute does not require a certain discussion, a depth of discussion when discussing these factors. They certainly have to be considered and discussed, but the superficiality or the ALJ's finding of that should not have a bearing on this case. I see my time up, and I'm happy to answer any other last minute questions, but I thank the court and ask that the court uphold the commissioner's 3 year sanction. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Schlack.
Thank you, Your Honor. Briefly touching on the issue of the standard of review, I believe there's disagreement between the parties as to what the correct standard of review is. As the court can see in our briefing, the standard of review that we cite is statutory Minnesota statute 14.69, the scope of judicial review, which states in a judicial review under section 14.63 to 14.68, the court may affirm the decision of the agency or remand the case for further proceedings, or it may reverse or modify the decision if the substantial rights of the petitioners have been prejudiced because the administrative finding, inferences, conclusions, or decisions are, and then there are a number of reasons, the last one, arbitrary and capricious. So getting to, I believe it was Judge Connolly's question about where do we go from here if we find the commissioner acted improperly? This court does have the authority and the jurisdiction to modify the decision of the commissioner if this court finds that her decision was arbitrary and capricious. So again,
are you saying we could say 2 years?
Yes, Your Honor. Under the statute, this court has the authority to modify the decision if the substantial rights of the petitioner have been prejudiced. And I would argue that the rights of Mr. Wright have certainly been prejudiced. He's been suspended from a program for simply submitting time cards that had clerical errors on them. Getting back a little bit to what ALJ Lefay found on this point, he found that appellant did this as a wrong-headed attempt to simplify his bookkeeping, not because he was trying to cheat or obfuscate. So here his rights have been prejudiced, his right to participate in a Minnesota healthcare program, CDCS, and be a paid caregiver vendor to recipient one, his right has been prejudiced. In fact, it's been completely taken away. It's been more than prejudiced, Your Honor. So the court does have the authority then to step in and modify the commissioner's decision. We, of course, are asking for a less significant sanction, as was recommended by Judge Lefay. Judge Lefay recommended the 1 year. Our client, I can tell the court, would be very content with 1 year, as we're coming up on the 2 year anniversary right now, following the Newsom case. Your Honors, that would also, in my opinion, be an appropriate sanction at this point. If there are no further questions, I rest, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shaw. Thank you, Mr. Schleck. The matter is submitted.